Hi, everybody. The podcast is Be You. The world will adjust. The world just gets crazier and crazier every single day. And I remember doing a show, Katie. We did one of our podcasts where I talked about the world sort of spinning on its axis and kind of spinning off the axis. But I thought what I'd do today is sort of just give some projections, some predictions, not on stock markets or Bitcoin or stuff like that. But I will tell you, and I know I've had this conversation before, but this whole Bitcoin, Ethereum, all of these things, they're just mind-boggling, you know, up 40%, down 30%. I don't know if I would call it a Ponzi. I don't know what I would call it, or this Dogecoin these guys made as a joke. Now they're billionaires. All I know is the universe just isn't that easy. You know, we always used to say, you know, if it's too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true, right? And there's so much incredible wealth being created at the same time as it's being destroyed that doesn't make any sense, right? People are not working for creating this. They're not creating anything. Maybe the original creators of Bitcoin, Ethereum, but like they're not creating anything. And maybe creation has changed in the way that, you know, we have thought about it historically in terms of a product. Now it's maybe just creating an idea, getting a following viral and things like that. But at the end of the day, as long as there are hands at play, there's no reason Bitcoin couldn't go to $100,000. There's no reason it couldn't go back to $5,000. And there's no rhyme nor reason for any of those. I don't know, what was the number? I think it was like 2,000 or 4,000 different cryptocurrencies that go on. So my view on people coming back to the workplace is really starting to get more and more defined. I think the single most important question people are going to have to ask themselves is, companies and individuals, how comfortable am I working with people that aren't vaccinated? Notwithstanding the fact that I am vaccinated, and companies will have to say to themselves, can we allow people to come back to the office that aren't vaccinated? You know, you can't send your kids to school if your kids aren't vaccinated for chickenpox and measles and all of those types of things. And I know there's a human cry about, you know, well, you know, social injustice, you know, certain people, certain diversity will not get done and others will. But at the end of the day, it's really a medical issue. And I'm even seeing, it's quite ironic because I've seen lately in the United States, state of Ohio, a bunch of different places are having lotteries. If you actually get vaccinated, you'll be an entry into a $5 million lottery. Or a daily lottery of $10,000. That's great. They're pulling out every stop to get people to draw on their most basic emotion of greed to sort of get them to get vaccinated. Because at the end of the day, the only way out of this, and may not be forever, we may have reoccurrences, is to get everybody vaccinated. But I think that we're starting to see people starting to experiment. I don't think we're going to have an all or none. I don't think it's possible to have an all or none. I don't think we're ever going to be back into a position where I can say to you, Katie, I need you in the office 40 hours a week. And, you know, it's back to the way things were, because I think that balance of rights has changed. And corporations are going to have to ask themselves, not only sort of broadly speaking, are we more productive or less productive, but individually speaking, you know, is Katie's work much better than it had been at the office? Has she utilized the situation to benefit her and to benefit? And if you're good with that and your work's really good, then why should I have to tell you to come back? Whereas, you know, Jim's a bit of a slacker, trying to head out to the first tee type of thing. You know, we need Jim a little more supervised in the office to keep an eye on him. I saw an interesting story this morning that many companies in Spain are working on a four-day work week. And within that four-day work week, they're working in a hybrid of those four-day work weeks. And they're balancing out. They're doing things like sort of you and I, Katie, can't be out of the office on the same day together. So all of this effort, and I think at the end of the day, that it will not be an all or none. I think there'll be some sort of hybrid combination. I think that just like the passports, they're talking about vaccination passports. I think people will need to be vaccinated in order to go back to the office. And I think that companies need to be very mindful about pressuring people to come to the office. Obviously, much older generation management is more likely to sort of go, well, you know, I'm in the office every day. I've been in the office for 52 years and I wear my suit and my tie and I'm a white male and I want everybody back in here kind of thing. But this period of time has really tested the breadth of organizational thinking. And my friends at McKinsey write about it all the time, but it's really pushing organizations to think in directions that historically they may never have chosen to, and perhaps weren't even on the radar screen. So I think as an individual, you should do what's best for you. As I've always said, what's in it for me? What's in it for you? If you're quite happy being at home and you've got the space, and if you don't have kids running around or dogs running around, or even if you have kids and dogs running around, but it works best for you, and really ask yourself the question, am I being more productive, right? Because that's going to be the acid test at the end of the day. I think where organizations are going to really struggle is I think they're really going to struggle with promotions. Not in the way that one would think, as in hard to tell who to promote and who not to promote. I would suggest that most organizations on a historical basis have promoted on the line of whose butt is my lips attached to? And that socialization and that friendship that builds in a collegial atmosphere. And, you know, Katie, I'm looking out for you. And when I move on to my job, you're going to take my spot. I think more and more organizations are getting more and more sophisticated about really understanding who are the right people for a job. It's not just about, oh, that person's next in line, right? And I know a number of cases in organizations across the board where people that thought they were in line for a promotion, when the person in front of them left, found out that they weren't, because people actually stopped and didn't sort of do the historical succession planning, which is everybody gets a bump, we all move up. People are actually starting to think about what skills do we need in that job? Does that person have the skills that we need? In historical terms, people always said, well, you know, Katie is really good at these things. She's not very good at this. So how can we build support around her for that? I think people are actually starting to say, Katie's really good at those things, and let's get Katie to do those things. And which then enables Katie to be excel at her job and excel at her performance, and it changes the lens in which people look at you. I think the other thing, I know everybody's going to say this is self-serving, but I'm seeing it more and more and more, continuous coaching. Continuous coaching, not coaching as in, hi, I'm Jim Bakey. I'm your new coach. Here are the things you're good at. We're not going to spend any time on those things. Here are the things you suck at. I'm going to make you better at the things you suck at. I think there's a real recognition in people that coaching has evolved dramatically, and it's not very productive if you're trying to get people to get better at things that they're not very good at and probably won't. And I'm starting to see the demand for coaching, you know, quite widespread. You know, as most people know, the majority of my work has been done in the financial services industry. But I've started to get lots of reach outs by private equity. People need coaching mostly on how to manage people, mostly on how to pick people, mostly on how to deal with people. It's not coaching about their products. Also, I think the other thing that's changing is people are realizing that coaching one person on the team is not enough. If you have the opportunity to coach a number of people in an organization, you're coaching them individually to improve. But at the end of the day, you probably have the best triangulation of what's going on in that organization. It's a very fine line to walk. I have to walk it myself all the time. I talk to Katie. I talk to Jim. I'm not a go-between between Katie and Jim. But because I hear Katie and I hear Jim, I have an idea of how to be able to give them solutions to help each other or tell them that this thing's not going to work. And you need to think about something else. I don't have to say that this person said that. And so this whole world of coaching, and God knows there are millions of people out there hanging their shingle out on coaching. I think the move in coaching towards people that have experience at running businesses. Historically, very few people that coached actually came from the business side. They probably came from HR and different places. But I think more and more people are looking for people that have built teams, have managed teams, have hired teams, have fired individuals, and dealt with all of the pressures, so that it's almost like, and I know I say this all the time with everybody that I coach, I play their role. And in most cases, I've played many of their roles. So when I put myself in character, I guess, in the acting world, I am the CEO, I am the CHRO, I am the head of this, or I am the head of that. And I bring everything that I've learned to that practice. So I think that's another trend we're going to see more and more of. And I think we're going to see coaching made more available and less resistance to it with younger people as well. And as people know, a big part of my practice is helping young people. And I'm finding more and more of them, notwithstanding this massive world of opportunity we're in, still don't know who they are, still afraid to say who they are. And once we can get them over that hurdle, then we'll be in great shape. So, you know, one of the things Katie brought up was pain points that we had in our job previously that will never come back or may never come back. And, you know, when I think about my own career and I think about what were the biggest pain points, I have to tell you, the biggest pain point was watching somebody get promoted that didn't deserve it, or watching someone's behavior that was tolerated by an organization. Those, to me, are the most destructive pain points for people that care and people that want to do a good job and people that want to be promoted on that. I think as we move towards the world that we're in, which is going to require organizations to really be evaluating people on a much more transparent and honest basis, and to really be looking at people's work, because that whole socialization of Katie's really nice, Jim's not, you know, that kind of thing, that quick to judge type of people has disappeared from us. And I see it myself with organization. There's, and you know, we talked about it in Toby's letter to the fans, right? We don't want any assholes, right? We don't want any divisive people, right? And there is a movement widespread towards rooting those people out. And I don't know if they're bad or good, but they don't belong where they are, right? Those things exist because management is unwilling to do something about it. But I think nowadays, given everything that's gone on, I think people are far more brave and are prepared to stand up and say, you know, like Toby did, prepared to stand up and say, no, this is unacceptable. I don't care how successful you are here. This is unacceptable. New pain points are going to be, it's going to be really hard to get to know people on a social basis. It's going to be really, really hard. You know, those coffees at Starbucks, lunches somewhere else, taking the GO train together, all of those types of things. I think that we will have lost something. I don't feel as badly for us as adults, especially us advanced senior citizens, but I really feel sorry for kids. I really feel sorry for kids in that socialization. And I think that runs throughout the thread between children and adults. And like, I miss a lot of people just not seeing them. And I've done some visits of people and stuff like that. But, you know, you're sort of sitting outside, particularly in Canada, not so much in the States, but you're sitting outside and it's almost like a manufactured catch-up type of thing, you know, as opposed to, hey, come over for a barbecue, you know, see them once, twice a week or whatever. And then one of the things that Katie asked me was, how do you define a dream job? And I have the dream job. My kids asked me, you know, my youngest daughter asked me the other day, you know, like, do we not have enough money that you could retire? You know, like, why are you still working, right? And I said, because I love what I do. I absolutely love what I do. I love who I do it with. And if I'm lucky, I'll do it to maybe the last day we'll be on a broadcast that I can do it till the day I die. And I don't know why I wouldn't. And I never felt like this in my life. And I realized the reason I never felt like this is because I didn't take the time to figure out what my dream job is. I didn't take the time to figure out what are the skills that I bring to that table and be diligent and disciplined to find that job, right? I knew I didn't fit at Woodgenny, and I knew I didn't fit at BMO when I was at both of those places. There were lots of places. I knew I should have probably gone to the United States, but I didn't. And so I spent a lifetime, 23, 4 years, trying to fit where I could never possibly fit. And I hear it, I see it all the time. And your dream job is not a fantasy. It's not a dream. It's a reality. Just ask Katie. Katie's in her dream job. She is the producer for all the podcasts of people that she likes. Every time she gets on, she has that smiling face and she loves what she does. What a great thing to have in life, to spend every day. Does it mean it's all perfect? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And then the last thing is leadership. Boy, there's a lot written about leadership and everybody talks about it. And I think the most important thing to understand about leadership, in my personal view, is that there is no singular leadership model that is the right one. Leadership is tied into what are you leading. But I think the thing that I like about leadership now, probably more so than ever, is leaders are understanding and realizing that you have to tell the truth. You have to tell people if they're doing a great job, and you have to tell them if they're doing a poor job. And you're actually doing the people that are doing a poor job a great disservice if you don't tell them. Because they may just be going on thinking that everything's hunky-dory and that everybody appreciates. Meanwhile, everybody's sort of going, I can't believe that person has that job, you know? I can't believe that person got promoted. So the real strong leaders that I see emerge, everybody delivers it differently. Some are screamers and yellers, some are quiet, some are pensive. That to me is less of an issue, right? The greatest issue is honesty and transparency. And if you as a leader can actually say to yourself, I have told the people that report to me honestly how I feel about them, honestly how I think their work is, and honestly what their opportunity is, notwithstanding that by telling them the honest truth, they may leave, then you're a great leader in my mind. So if you're in a leadership role, my question for you this week is, have you told people the truth? Does everybody that report to you know what you think that they're doing well, know what you think that they're doing poorly, and are you being honest with them about their upward mobility and what their chances are for advancement or more compensation and everything else? I'm Jim Bakei. The podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust.